for me to address. It's something I discovered really after I first started teaching prophecy. I guess I discovered it somewhere back in the late 70s or early 80s, and it intrigued me. It still does. Now, I am not advocating that you change your viewpoint on what I'm about to present. I want to make that clear. I am not advocating that you change your viewpoint on what I'm about to present. What I am advocating is that you consider it and adopt it as a secondary viewpoint or as a very real possibility. Most people, when they hear the expression, the whole world, or expressions like wherever men dwell on the earth, or all the earth, they automatically assume that it means just what it says. All the earth as we know it today. That may well be true in most cases, in many cases. And certainly in the Gospels when it says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Certainly the world that is used there means the whole world as we know it today and is not used as a hyperbole. I'm trying to be very careful on what I say because I do not want to mislead people. On the other hand, I want people to be aware that there is a very legitimate alternative to certain things that are taught in prophecy. And I'm merely trying to get you to be aware that it's better to know two different ways so that whenever the prophetic event occurs, whichever one it is, you'll be more apt to recognize it. So far, I haven't really said much, and I'm sure it's been rather confusing, but you'll see why I made those statements as I proceed. Over the years, you may have noticed that I have given, at times, fuzzy answers concerning the mark of the beast as to exactly what it is, precisely how it will be placed on us, and if the mark is real or symbolic or both. When I study a particular subject, I pour myself into it for however long it takes me to understand it. And there are some questions in prophecy, even though I may have done just that for many years, I still am not satisfied with my understanding of them. However, as far as the mark of the beast is concerned, I have never devoted much study to it. Once I believed I knew the general time of its placement, I lost interest in it. Why? Because I do not believe it will be placed on men and women in this country. I also do not believe it will be placed on men and women until right around the time of the rapture. Now, why do I believe it will not be placed on men and women in this country, in the United States? Because the most serious error made by many who attempt to teach prophecy is a misapplication of what is stated in the scripture in the English language. What is this misapplication error? Not understanding the use of many figures of speech in the Hebrew and Greek language. When the scripture says the whole world, we hit our Bibles and say, brother, when God says the whole world, he means the whole world. And that settles it. And the congregation is subdued. But God is not allowed, is he? But is God not allowed to use the figures of speech in the language in which he writes? But is God not allowed to use the figures of speech in the language in which he writes? Do we determine what it means in our day and time? And then dare others to question us. Some preachers don't want to understand what God said in the language in which he wrote the prophecy. They just want it to mean what they think it means in their language and what goes along with what they would like it to mean or what fits their predetermined theology or what they have already taught for years. Unfortunately, for some preachers, God uses a lot of different figures of speech in the languages in which he writes. And they cannot understand why anyone would dare question it if God said it. I would never question what God said. I would never question what God said. But that is not the question. The question is, what did he say in the language through which he spoke? We were taught to follow the rules of interpretation in the Missionary Baptist Seminary from the Golden Key by Ben Bogard. I thank God for those rules I was taught. I thank God for being taught these rules. I use them today. Who is speaking? When is he speaking? About what is he speaking? Where is he speaking? There are a whole list of rules you apply in interpretation. But the last question that must be answered after all the Golden Key rules are applied is simply this: what did he say? We're going to talk about the hyperbole. It's very important. As a matter of fact, it's going to determine the correctness of a lot of interpretations. The hyperbole is one of the many figures of speech that God uses in the Hebrew and Greek language. And that is what we're going to discuss at this time. When we're finished, I think you will see why I do not believe the mark of the beast will be put on in this country. But I feel it only fair to warn you, if you tell your pastor, Brother McElmurray doesn't believe the mark of the beast will be put on in this country, he may well tell you, I don't know what I'm talking about. And if you try to talk to him about hyperbole, he may well tell you that that is my problem and I need to change breakfast cereals, or that much learning has made me mad. Now, Webster's Dictionary defines hyperbole as a figure of speech consisting of an exaggeration not intended to deceive, but to add force to the statement. A figurative statement of anything as being greater or less than the reality. Let me repeat that. Webster's Dictionary defines hyperbole as a figure of speech consisting of an exaggeration not intended to deceive, but to add force to the statement. A figurative statement of anything as being greater or less than the reality. When God uses a hyperbole, it does not mean God has lied. It simply means he has used a hyperbole, and you are obligated to study to show yourself approved unto God by understanding how he used it in the language in which he placed it. Down through the centuries, in every era of time since the cross, we have had men identified as the Antichrist. There were New Testament churches in the time of Napoleon, and there were God-called preachers that pastored those churches. Many of them identified Napoleon as the Antichrist. They believed he would dominate the whole world. Then along came Kaiser Wilhelm in the First World War, and many New Testament church pastors quickly identified Kaiser Wilhelm as the Antichrist. Of course, when Benito Mussolini began to rise in Italy, since there was an awareness that the Vatican was located in Rome, Benito Mussolini was identified by quite a few Missionary Baptist preachers as the Antichrist. And of course, the most popular of all was Adolf Hitler, and he was well identified by many of our preachers. I remember reading many of the pamphlets, and there was a teaching that he would spread across the entire earth and take the whole world over. The same was true with Hirohito and Tojo on the Japanese side. And then it was believed that these three would form a coalition, and they did, and dominate the whole world, and one of them would be the Antichrist, and another would be the false prophet, etc., etc., etc. Now, we've been believing for a long time that in the prophetic realm, every time you heard the expression, the whole world, or all the earth, or wherever men dwell on the earth, that in our day and time, as we read these prophecies, we were supposed to understand, without any question, that it meant the whole world as we know it today. That may well be the case. I'm not arguing that. I'm merely saying you should be better prepared in that you should have at least an alternative view to that. Of course, God knew that America would be discovered, as well as South America, Australia, Antarctica, all the Western countries. He knew what the whole world would consist of. But the question is not what God knew, it's what God meant. I'm of the persuasion that when God uses the expression the whole world and all the earth, in prophecy many times he uses it as a hyperbole. And that is precisely what I intend to make a case to show you. In the days of Ezekiel, when Ezekiel wrote his prophecies, and Daniel wrote his prophecies, and when Isaiah wrote his prophecies, and Micah wrote his prophecies, the general time span was 600 to 700 B.C. And the prophetic land at that time extended up into Europe. It included the coast of North Africa, the northern coast. It went as far down as Ethiopia. It went as far over as, I suppose, what you would call Iraq or Iran, perhaps, today. It went as far north as what you would consider now to be Moscow. So that was the whole earth to the people that received the prophetic writings of Ezekiel and Daniel and Isaiah and Micah and all the other Old Testament prophets. That was the whole world to them. So when God used the expression, the whole world, or all the earth, or wherever men dwell on the earth, that's what it meant. Now the question I pose to you is this. How do we know whether or not God means for us to look back at that, since he knew we would come along, and he knew how long time would last for us in the age of the Gentiles? How do we know that he doesn't mean for us to look back at that time and to interpret the whole world to mean that section of the earth that was known at that time? Quite frankly, I believe that he does. I'm quite convinced of it. Now, that doesn't make it so, but the possibility is very real, and I think you should consider it, and later on you'll see why I'm so convinced that you should consider it. Now, the prophetic world at the time of John is another very interesting phenomena. It went a little further than at the time of Ezekiel's writings. And so we would have to consider in that day the whole world as being a little larger. The whole world in John's day, if you consider at one time, for a brief period of time, I believe under Trajan, the Roman Empire extended all the way over into Iran, all the way up into the area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. The Roman Empire extended as far north as Scotland, encompassed just about all of England, and it included Spain, the entire northern coastline of Africa, and it went as far south as Ethiopia. So roughly, at the time of John's writing, if you drew a line from India, directly north to extreme northern Sweden, in Norway, I should say extreme north, eastern Norway and Sweden, that's from India to that point. Then you drew it up to the border of England and Scotland. Then actually included all of England, drove it, actually drew the line on down to Morocco, then across to southern Egypt, then down to Ethiopia, then across to all of Saudi Arabia, and back across to your original starting point in India. That would be at the time of John's writings in the book of Revelation, 95-96 AD. That would be what the Hebrews understood, as well basically as the rest of the world, to be the whole earth, to be a whole world, to be wherever men dwelled on the earth. Now I'm going to demonstrate to you and prove to you that God definitely in the past, in prophetic writings, God has used that expression, the whole world, all the earth, wherever men dwell, or hyperboles like that, to describe the known world of that day. And I'm convinced that that's what he means for us to do when we look back at it. You see, I don't think the Antichrist is going to dominate the whole world as we know it. I think he's going to dominate North Africa, along the coastline. He's going to dominate as far south as Ethiopia. He'll dominate all the way across into India. He'll dominate all of Saudi Arabia. He'll dominate all of Europe. And I believe that's where his domination will be. And I believe that's where the mark of the beast will be put on. I don't think the Antichrist empire is biblically indicated to be so super strong as many expositors have come to believe. Could I be wrong? Well, certainly. But once again, I'm merely presenting this as an alternative. And I want you to be aware of it, whether you believe it or not. Because if the Antichrist arises over in that area known as the whole world in John's day, and he begins to dominate that area, yet he does not completely control the rest of the world, I don't want you to sit around thinking, well, that's not the Antichrist. He's not dominating the United States or South America or Australia or New Zealand or Canada. He's not dominating any of those. So this can't be the Antichrist. But I think it will be. That's what I believe. Now, have I completely thrown out the fact that the possibility exists that he may dominate the whole earth, just exactly as most prophetic teachers put out today? No, I certainly have not discarded it. And I do look for it. And if all of a sudden he certainly does start to dominate the whole earth, I'm not going to run out and say, well, this isn't the Antichrist because he's only supposed to dominate Europe, North Africa, the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, all of the Middle East, all of Europe, as far over as India, and all the way up into what is known as the Ukraine, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and that area. Now, Daniel had a great stature. In the second chapter of Daniel, the head of that great stature was a head of gold. And it was a great empire. But it only extended over as far as Egypt to the west, as far as north as Turkey to the north. It included what we would classify today as Syria. It included the Assyrian section that was overcome. And it also included the area it would cover would be parts of Iran, Iraq, parts of Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, a few parts of northern Saudi Arabia, and across into Egypt, and a little part of Libya. So that was the whole world at that time. And we're going to take a look at that. Now, comparable to the head of Daniel's stature, which is found in the second chapter of Daniel, in the seventh chapter of Daniel, there is a lion, which is the same as the head. the first great empire that arose in a series out of which eventually the Antichrist was finally to arise in a kingdom that would consist of the toes of the stature, which we'll be talking about later. Now, in prophecy, when the Bible predicts the future and uses the expression all the earth or the whole earth concerning coming ages, what does it mean? Well, first of all, let's ask the question, did the Babylonian Empire dominate the whole earth? Did Nebuchadnezzar conquer North America, South America, Australia, New Zealand, Alaska, Antarctica, China, Russia? Did he actually dominate the whole earth? Let's take a look at Jeremiah 51, verse 7, and then verse 49. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunken. That's what it says, all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. Now we know that the Babylonian Empire, the head of the statue and the first beast, a great lion with wings, did not dominate all the earth as we know it today. Now you may say, well, Brother McElmurray, any fool knows that. I realize that. And apparently you know it also. But how do you know that he didn't use the expression all the earth in the time of John's day to indicate the known world at that time? And how do you know we're not supposed to look back and consider that that's a hyperbole? I think we are. Now in Jeremiah 51:49, as Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. So in Jeremiah 51:7, he says all the earth. In Jeremiah 51:49, he says all the earth. So I contend that if you're going to correctly interpret that prophecy, you're going to have to take the known world at that time. And that does not include the rest of the world, because Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. And this Jeremiah prophecy and Daniel and Ezekiel and Micah, Isaiah, they were all written about 600 to 700 B.C. Now let's take a look at the statue, the head of it, in Daniel 2:36 through 38. And this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beast of the field, and the fowls of the heaven, hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. Now this is what he said. This is what God had Daniel write. Wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beast of the fields and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. He did not rule over the Aztec Indians or the Incas. He did not rule over the American Indians or the Alaskan Eskimos. Yes, Eskimos. Eskimos. I'll get it right in a minute. When you get to be 69 years old, you have a habit of your mind not quite correctly connected to your mouth, or vice versa. He did not dominate Australia, the Aborigines. So you know that this is a hyperbole. So how do you know when John wrote his prophecies in Revelation, and he uses expressions like the whole earth, all the earth, that that isn't also true in John's day? How do you know we aren't supposed to look back and interpret that to mean the known world of that day? I think we are. Now, after the head of the statue, there were the arms, the chest of the statue. Two arms indicate there were two parts of the empire which merged together, called the Medo-Persian Empire. It followed the empire of Daniel, of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian Empire. Now, in the seventh chapter of Daniel, it's pictured as a bear. And so we're going to now go on to the third empire that was prophesied by Daniel in about 600 BC to one day come upon the earth. And it did. It was the Grecian Empire, or the Macedonian Empire of Alexander the Great. And in Daniel's statue, it was pictured as the waste, and just the waste itself. It was pictured as a leopard in the seventh chapter of Daniel, a very fast-moving army of Alexander the Great that drove all the way across to India before he fell dead with a falling sickness. So this Grecian Empire was the greatest up to that point. It had extended all the way across to India. He took Egypt, parts of Libya. And his up to that time, since he overcame this great Persian Empire, had been the greatest. Now let's take a look at what he said in Daniel 2:39, talking about the waste of the statue. He's going to tell about the kingdom that arises after the Medo-Persian Empire. Daniel 2:39, talking about the Macedonian or Grecian Empire. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass. Now here's the third kingdom of brass. The third kingdom of brass is the brass waste band. Notice what he says about the empire of Alexander the Great. Which shall bear rule over all the earth. Which shall bear rule over all the earth. Alexander did not rule over the United States, or South America, or Australia, or New Zealand, or Antarctica, or China. He did not rule over the Pacific Islands, or New Guinea. Now, you say, well, that's obvious. I know it's obvious. And I think it's so obvious that God meant for us to realize when John wrote his prophecies and used the expressions, similar expressions, just like this. He didn't mean all the earth as we know it today, but the earth at that time. Those prophecies of John were written to the people on the earth, the whole earth as they knew it, in 95 and 96 AD. And they were written basically to churches. As a matter of fact, in the first chapter of Revelation, John says it was written to churches, plural. Seven times, in chapters 2 and 3, seven times he writes this expression. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches, plural. In the last chapter of the book of Revelation, he says, I, Jesus, have sent mine angel, my messenger, my angelos, my messenger. I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you these things in the churches, plural. Now, when he used those expressions, all the earth, the whole earth, what do you think he meant? Well, he wrote to those people in the churches. What do you believe they thought he meant? Well, they naturally thought he meant the whole world as it was known at that time. Why can't we take that rule and apply it still today and believe the Antichrist will only dominate that part of the earth that was known to them as the whole world? I believe we can. I believe we should. But I'm prepared for the alternative, which virtually all prophetic teachers issue. I just don't think he meant the whole earth as we know it today. Now let's go on. And let's go to the next great empire, which was the Roman Empire. Now, it was pictured from the waist down, the loins, down through the legs. There were two legs. Daniel prophesied this in about 600 BC. And yet, far in advance of that, in the time of John's day, he knew there would be a Roman Empire. God did, and Daniel, he revealed it to Daniel. And the legs of the statue represent the Eastern Division, the Greek Orthodox Church, and the other leg represents the Western Division, the Papal Church. So the next great empire that arose on Daniel's statue, the second chapter of Daniel, was pictured by the loins and the legs. And in the 7th chapter of Daniel, the same empire was pictured as a wild beast that was different from all the rest. Now this 4th beast was, of course, the Roman Empire. Now let's take a look at what Daniel indicated when he wrote in about 600 B.C. He probably wrote closer to 592 B.C., but whatever, somewhere back in that general time frame. And it may have been even before that, but certainly it was quite a ways back. Did the Roman Empire dominate the whole earth? That's the question. Well, of course, we know it only went as far over as Iran for a brief period of time, I believe under Trajan. The Roman Empire took over for a brief period of time the Parthian Empire and went over as far as Iran, as far north as that section of land between the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea, the Caspian Steppes, and took in Turkey, what we know today as the Middle East, took in Ethiopia, Egypt, what we call Libya, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, took in Spain, England, France, all of Europe. And I described earlier in this tape, drawing a line from India up to the extreme northeastern sections of Sweden and Norway, then across to the border of Scotland and England, then down to French Morocco. Well, it's not French Morocco anymore. I'm showing my age. It was French Morocco when I was stationed there. And then from Morocco across to Saudi Arabia, then back across to India. That was the known world at that time. Now notice what John wrote. Daniel 7:23-27. Daniel 7:23-27. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth. That's what it says. And shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. Now the whole earth, the expression that's used there, certainly cannot be in the United States or South America, New Zealand, Australia, the Pacific Islands, Antarctica. It can't mean any of that. If you believe what it says, it's a hyperbole. And it's used there to describe the whole earth as it was known in the time of Daniel. So the whole earth, even in the time of Daniel, they knew that England existed. They knew that these areas basically existed, but they didn't know much about them. Now the next kingdom is an interesting kingdom because it is supposed to arise out of the ruins or ashes of the fourth beast, the Roman Empire. And so it could come anywhere out of the area that Rome conquered. Now, quite frankly, I am persuaded it will come out of the area that Rome conquered, which is the southern flank of the old Roman Empire. I believe it will come out of the area that stretches from Morocco eastward, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Armenia, Ethiopia, what's known as Sudan today. I think that is where this last great empire is going to arise. I don't think it will be as strong an empire and dominate the whole world. Why do I say that? Well, let's take a look at Daniel's description of the toes, the 10 toes of this great statue. Will the Antichrist, weak and strong Arab empire, dominate the whole earth as we know it today? Let's take a look at Daniel 2 and 42. Daniel 2, 42. Does this sound like a great, strong, mighty empire that dominates the United States, South America, Australia, New Zealand, China, Russia, all the islands in the Pacific, South America? Does it sound like a great worldwide empire with great strength? Listen to what it says. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. So the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. That doesn't sound like a very strong empire to me. You say, well, brother, that's not what the Bible says. I'll tell you. You have heard it presented for so long, so frequently, by so many different men, that it's very difficult for you to just simply read that and let it say what it says. And the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. That doesn't sound like a very strong kingdom to me. Now let's take a look at Cruden's Complete Concordance. This is a very old concordance. Let's take a look at Cruden's Complete Concordance. And we're going to look at what it says about the word world. Cruden's Complete Concordance, this is the word world. Here's what it says about world. To the Eastern people of earliest times, the world was very small. To the Eastern people of earliest times, the world was very small, including little except Mesopotamia, Canaan, Arabia, and parts of Egypt. During the Old Testament times, it remained much the same, extending a little to the east as the nations there grew to power. And other parts of Asia and Africa became somewhat known to the adventurous. Few knew more than rumors of Italy and even Greece. In the time of Christ, the world really meant the Roman Empire, with parts of Asia and Africa which were more or less under its sway. Let me read that again. In the time of Christ, the world really meant the Roman Empire, with parts of Asia and Africa which were more or less under its sway. All outside of this was vague. In Bible language, world is frequently used for the inhabitants of the world, and in the New Testament, of moral existence in distinction from spiritual life. So what I'm showing you and telling you basically makes a lot of sense. Now notice in Daniel 2:38, it says, and wheresoever the children of men dwell. You know, in the time of the Babylonian Empire, that didn't include the Western world, the Western powers. It was just that small area. In Daniel 2:39, he says, and there shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, and another third kingdom of brass. This was the Macedonian Empire, which shall bear rule over all the earth. So the Macedonian Empire only dominated the known world of that day. And in Daniel 2:42, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. That doesn't sound like a very strong kingdom. Now let's do a little switch. Let's go over to the time of John's writing. By this time, I've already described to you twice what the known world was. Revelation 13:1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns. Those are the same as the ten toes of Daniel's statue and the ten horns on Daniel's fourth beast. Now take a look at Revelation 13:8-9. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. I know what 99.999% of all prophetic teachers believe, that the United States, South America, New Zealand, Australia, the whole world as we know it today, is going to worship him. I don't believe that. I think it's going to be in the same area that John, writing to the people of that day, understood to be the earth at that time. In verse 16, listen to what he says in Revelation 13, 16. And he causeth all, both small and great, to receive a mark. Remember what he said back in Daniel? And wheresoever the children of men dwell. In Revelation 13, 16, he says, and he causeth all. So does that mean all the people on this earth, North America, South America, Antarctica? Does that mean all the world as we know it today? Or does it mean the world John's day? I think it means the world of John's day. You may say to me, well, Brother McElmurray, you're going to be sadly mistaken. No, I'm not going to be sadly mistaken, because I also believe that the possibility exists that it may mean the whole world as we know it today. So in reality, I'm better prepared than you are. I'm prepared for both possibilities. So why am I presenting this? Well, it's certainly not going to make me popular. But I do have a concern for God's people. And I think you're better prepared if you understand this possibility that I'm presenting exists. Because if you don't believe this possibility exists, and it never hurt it, and someone arose over there and dominated Europe, North Africa, the Mideast, as we know it today, you would be inclined to say, well, that can't be the Antichrist because he doesn't dominate us. There are a lot of interesting things about all this. You ever been to a football game or watched it on television where on one end of the field, hanging across off the rails of the stadium, it'd have this 666? I can walk out on a street here in Dardanelle, just pick out anybody and ask them, have you ever heard of the mark of the beast? Most of them will say, yeah. And I'll say, where is it supposed to be placed? On your forehead or your right hand? Everybody in this country's heard of it. It's very well known. I spent a lot of time in Europe and in North Africa and in the Holy Land. I'll never forget the first time I tried to witness to an Arab. I didn't know much about the Islamic faith then. Since then, I've read the Quran. It's not that large a book. And when I started talking to him about the Lord Jesus Christ, he started screaming, there is one God, and Muhammad is his prophet. There is one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. There is one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. And pretty soon, the Arabic people, Islamic faith, Muslims, began to crowd around me and him. I was lucky to get out of there with my life. Oh, I'm exaggerating. I just slipped away through a lot of stares of hatred. They don't know anything about the mark of the beast. They've never heard of it. They're forbidden to read our New Testament, or at least strongly urged not to. They would take a mark of any kind to get food, clothing, and shelter. You ever been to France? We've been trying to do mission work over there for a long, long time. How successful has it been? Well, I applaud and thank God for the men who've tried it, but no work we've ever done over there has been successful as we measure success.